Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the New Gen Mindset Capital Market Series. I'm Dan Kozel here with Nick Tartaglia. Nick, yes. Crypto has been on an interesting uptrend recently with Absolutely. All the ETF madness that we're seeing right now. What are your thoughts on that? I'm just curious.
You know, it's interesting because, everybody thought for a last while that the market was dead. Everything was dead. Recession fear. I mean, the market obviously is not behaving that way. It doesn't necessarily mean that it might shift, but there's definitely a lot of interesting things happening. And surprisingly, Bitcoin has definitely been showing new life, and it's kind of revitalizing the market again.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting to note too is the fact that when we had that sell-off, it was about 600 points, I think, in the Dow the other day, Bitcoin was actually up. So that tells me that the decoupling of a risk on trade perhaps is fading away. That thesis is yet to be determined. But what we wanted to do here today is really bring somebody on here who's a well-seasoned expert, is actively involved in the crypto space, and has an extensive amount of experience as well in precious metals. So without further ado, he was a seed investor in Echelon Wealth Partners, one of the largest Canadian investment dealers. And after leaving Bay Street, he held executive positions at Kaden and Aaron Resources. He later joined as the CEO of Trillium Gold, and he led the consolidation of the Confederation Greenstone Belt in Red Lake Mining Camp, and the establishment of a world-class exploration portfolio in both precious metals and critical elements. And now he is the head of capital markets of a company called DeFi Technologies, which is traded on the markets. Welcome to the Capital Market Series, Russell Starr.
Nice to have me. Thank you very much. And nice to be chatting with you guys. I appreciate it.
Of course. So Russell, traditionally what we always like to do is start off by getting to know our guests. Give us a little bit of your background, the transition into, your studies, what you did, and basically how you ended up in the space you are now.
Sure. Well, to start, arguably at the beginning, undergrad in economics, master's in econometrics, started my PhD in econometrics, did an MBA. So I don't know, there was probably a world where I was on my way to being a prof. Kind of got headhunted / lucky and ended up on Bay Street in the prestigious dealer training program at RBC. Saw a bunch of the trading floor, loved what I was doing, worked as an institutional salesperson, institutional trader, corporate finance, helped start and build Echelon, which now is a major dealer. But nothing against the dealer side of the business, but I had a real itch that I needed to scratch, so to speak, in terms of building things. So I joined up with an amazing guy, Ivan Bebek, who's a little bit of a legend in the gold space. Joined Kaden Resources. We sold that to Agnico, stuck around with Orin. We split that into three. And as you guys mentioned, stuck with the gold trade, but have always, I shouldn't say always, but have had a view that Bitcoin could be a similar trade to the gold trade. And the market is certainly showing that. Like the question you just asked, like how did Bitcoin go up when the rest of the market went down on a risk off day? My thesis has always been that if Bitcoin can actually establish itself, it's not illogical to think that it's going to get 1 or 2% of the gold trade. And if it gets 1 or 2% of the gold trade, you're looking at a completely different trade than sort of that risk on Bitcoin trade. You actually get that inflationary hedge. So that's kind of my story. I'm going to stick with critical elements, precious, and crypto. I think those are all incredible areas to be let's see if the big seven ever have a down trading day in the US, but it's pretty worrisome when everybody has the same trade on in their positions, which is basically what's happening in the US.
Yeah. I was talking to a buddy of mine who works on the institutional crypto side, and the amount of inflows from the Bitcoin ETF that are coming in now, I think one of your partners, Anthony Pompliano, who's involved in DeFi, he mentioned this, but the level of inflow is exceeding the supply. And I think it's just basic economics at that point. So what are you seeing on that side right now maybe from what you're doing on a day-to-day basis with DeFi, that actually continues to validate sort of that thesis that I think everyone here, I think, fully agrees with.
Well, there's a few things you have to keep in mind. When the ETF was announced, everybody thought, you know, the ETF price, Bitcoin ETF price, was going to go to the moon. In reality, what happened was it traded down almost 20%. But the answer to why that happened is actually a little bit more intriguing than most people would understand. First of all, you had people switching or selling out of Grayscale. So just pure selling out of Grayscale. And then you also had a lot of shorting that occurred ahead of the ETF and during the ETF announcement that was basically associated with FTX. And I believe it was Galaxy managing the book, but they wisely were taking advantage of those high prices to try to recoup as many of the losses that had occurred in FTX. So you actually had a bit of a double whammy, putting pressure on the Bitcoin ETF price and the Bitcoin price in general. Now that's all gone. And so you almost had like this inverted view quickly. And you know how many, like, hindsight asset management is great, ham. Yet everybody saying, oh, Bitcoin's done. You had a couple of well-known speakers in the US, oh, Bitcoin's done. It's never going to find its footing. I'm not going to mention his name, but everybody knows him. And it's been commented on Twitter about a million times. And then all of a sudden, you see this skyrocketing of Bitcoin thereafter. And that's associated with, I think, almost exactly what I was just describing. And that is, you know, people who actually want to own the Bitcoin ETF, but then institutional fund managers who are looking at, okay, you know, do I buy a gold company? Do I buy a gold ETF? Or do I buy the Bitcoin ETF? You know, what's the relative valuation like? What's easier? You know, there's a carry in the gold trade just because it weighs so much. So that's always taken into perspective in the price. I still argue that being long gold equities is a great trade because the gold price will move and rocket at some point. But it's certainly panning out that Bitcoin's getting sort of the most attention right now. And it's certainly, I would say it's the best marketed, I don't even know what you want to call it. It's the best marketed ecosystem in the world. You know, it's growing 2 times faster than the internet grew. And, you know, anyone who doesn't have some of this or something related to Bitcoin in their portfolio is probably going to lose out big time.
You know, it's always interesting to see that a lot of people traditionally, they're either on one side or the other when it comes to crypto or gold, let's say precious metals. And something we're noticing is as we're coming down with the younger generations is a lot of them are more open to both segments, whereas the OGs or the older people in this ecosystem are on one side or the other. So obviously, seeing with yourself, you clearly seem to see more of a synergy between both ecosystems. Can you tap more into that and kind of give us your perspective as why, obviously being from both sides, having an economic background. So for sure, you know, you can see the energy and the desire to kind of create a synergy between both ecosystems.
Well, the capital markets is kind of a win-loss ecosystem, right? And people really thrive on that. You get a lot of athletes in it. You get a lot of type A players in it. And when you look at it from that perspective, not necessarily like you're taking it to the investor versus the actual capital market side. I'm looking more at the capital market side. It really is I love gold and I hate Bitcoin. Like how can you get your wife a Bitcoin ring? You know, I've heard so many negative comments out of so many people. Oh, this is a fad. It's never going to translate into anything. I'd actually argue now that, you know, it's gone through the FTX scandal, the Voyager Alameda scandal, Three Arrows Capital. I mean, this is an entity that's had so many black swan events. And yet here we are at, you know, 50,000 that I think you're well past arguing that this is a fad. It's not a fad. This is here to stay. It's just where is it going and what's that value going to be? And you know, I think there's a world where you're going to see Bitcoin for oil. And to a certain extent, you know, Gensler's arguments were right at the SEC. It is a very detrimental product to the US dollar, but that's not an argument to disallow an ETF. And that's what the courts said, right? So, you know, you have these governments that are blowing their brains out, literally blowing their brains out with spending. You know, if you or I went into a bank and said, you know, we've got 300-400% debt to our income, and we want to buy a house, we get laughed out of the bank. And yet you have, you know, Canada and the US just spending at will with, you know, regardless of what the costs are going to be to future generations or even near-term generations. So I guess the long-winded answer for me is, you know, if people want to be haters, let them be haters. I'm happy to make money while they're hating it, right? Like if the capital markets were efficient, none of us would make money. And so you really have to have a view. You have to think it through. And it may not play out in a year or two, but ultimately that long trade, if it's right, macro trade is going to be one of your biggest ever winners. Just look at what Eric Sprott did and how he became a billionaire. You know, he sat on that gold trade for 5, 6, 7, maybe even 10 years before it actually translated into billions. But now he's viewed as one of the most intelligent investors ever. And how can you argue with that? Look at his returns. Mm-hmm. I think we're looking at that exact trade, but in a much smaller window with Bitcoin.
The sort of psychology right now, sort of with the Bitcoin investor, the crypto crowd versus the gold investor, it's so different. But
yeah,
you're a contrarian, but you're also, and this is why, like, this is where Nick and I, and I think you align, is like you're right. You have to own both in this market, the way the cycles are operating. Just look at where we're at with, like, you know, Nvidia, for example. It's like the Cisco trade right now. How do we go about fixing sort of the psychology and making people realize on the crypto side that, hey, maybe you do need a little bit of gold while also being into crypto, and then vice versa for the people that are on the gold side as well?
Honestly, I think the crypto purists would be more open to having some gold than the gold purists would be to having some crypto. I view the gold, you know, gold has done a really crappy job of marketing itself, first of all. Bitcoin's done a great job of marketing itself. So there's a real generational perspective there. The smart people, I would say, sit on both sides, just as you mentioned. Like fine, you can hate it, but just look at what it's doing, right? Like, you don't have to like cannabis to not make money in it. You don't have to not like uranium to not make money in it. You got to be open and flexible and look at what's actually generating returns. The biggest challenge now, though, is as long as those seven continue to test new highs, you're seeing most of the flow of capital into those seven. You need to see a crack in that trade, in my opinion. You need to see another 2000 and 2001 where the tech bubble bursts. But the intriguing part of that is that if that happens, like Bitcoin sits on both sides. It's a risk on and a risk off asset, right? It looks like it's becoming an inflationary hedge, but also a risk on asset. You know, you should theoretically do well in both. How you convince people to do that, I don't know, other than them watching. Like, I have friends who have been so negative Bitcoin for so long who are actually now buying DeFi. And they're doing it because I've been obviously riding them pretty hard, but also because they're seeing what's happening with the crypto industry. And really, it's hard to watch yourself be wrong for 5 years, right? Mm-hmm. you got to adapt if you're wrong for 5 years.
So with regards to sort of the adoption rate and sort of the compliance, I mean, you talked about it, right? Like, it took... Yep. There was like three black swans in this process. We had FTX collapse last year. Now it's like when you mentioned, hey, like the last 5 years, you'd have to own some form of Bitcoin. I mean, it has been, and this is factual now, it has been the best performing asset over the last 10 years, right?
Yep.
So walk us through, and we'll talk about DeFi real quickly here after this, but walk us through sort of, you know, when that adoption starts hitting mass adoption, because we're still in the early innings, right? I think we can agree on that.
Yeah.
Once that massive adoption starts happening, how do you envision sort of the psychology changing for most of the people in the markets, the market participants? And then what does that mean for the whole industry going forward?
Well, I guess the easy answer to that is there are a lot of people who would rather miss the first 80% and catch the next 200%, if that makes sense, or miss the first 200 and catch the next 1,000. So I think what you're going to see is almost a circular loop here. And you're seeing it. You're seeing the selling mitigating in Grayscale and in Bitcoin in general, and you're seeing flows into the ETFs, which, you know, we all thought we were going to see. But the flows into the ETF are causing the ETF to go higher. And as it goes higher, more people are buying it because they're fearing they're missing out. So I think it's going to be something similar to that, where they sit and they watch, and, you know, Bitcoin, next thing they know, Bitcoin's at 65,000. And you're like, oh man, how do I buy it at 65,000? That's all time highs. Then it goes to 68, 70, 90. That's when I think you start seeing the frenzy pick up. And that is, we've missed it. We've got to get in. We're underperforming because we're not long this asset class. And you're going to see this flow of institutional capital come in, because, you know, all of these funds and hedge funds are measured by their returns versus exchanges, right? And if one fund is long Bitcoin, DeFi, and Marathon, or, you know, whatever, pick your combination, miner, you know, we're an ETF, ETP company, and the actual underlying, and they're outperforming, you know, fund ABC to the tune of 30%, ABC is going to have to jump in.
Yeah.
So it's one of those ones where I just think the performance is going to force people to join the party, I guess, so to speak.
And do you think that the regulatory landscape is, to an extent, especially in the West, kind of in what's the word I'm looking for, inhibiting that development?
Oh yeah. Yeah. The regulators are, I mean, no surprise, the SEC, it's, you know, it's obvious, everything they can sue, they're suing, despite the fact they're losing. Canada, like we generally do, just take our lead from the US. Our regulators, instead of actually embracing an industry and embrace, like, you even see it in the junior mining space, right? It's everybody's talking about critical elements, and yet our government does nothing to help them, and our regulators make it almost impossible to raise money. They make it like it's just such an arduous process. It's over government and under performance, when it should be over performance and under government. So I mean, like, there's a reason why DeFi is in Europe and looking to, you know, broaden its opportunities into the Middle East, into Asia. You've got governments who are pro crypto, pro Bitcoin. And, you know, not surprising, this has probably something to do with currency dynamics and politics. I can't say it for sure, but, you know, you've got a situation where, you know, finding an auditor, they charge you like $1.5-2 million just to do an audit, because the regulators are so negative crypto, and there's so few that will touch it because of how negative the regulators are. And yet you have this ecosystem that is just flourishing and growing. Mm-hmm. Like it's almost forgive my language here, it's almost like a perverted thought process. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you guys doing? Why are you not embracing Canadian entrepreneurialism, right? Like Hive, Hut, DeFi, these are all Canadian success stories that you're actually trying to inhibit growth of. It's bonkers to me. So sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, are there specific regulatory things that you say, if we got rid of this, it would help? Like, are there specific reference points that you that you know, or is just so much out there that it just makes it complicated?
Well, I just identified one. Like, you know, it's almost impossible to find an auditor that's even remotely reasonable with price. Why are auditors that expensive in the crypto industry in Canada? Well, the answer is because the regulators are so negative. They're basically working to make your life harder in this industry rather than facilitate. In my opinion, doing their job, right? Like, facilitate growth.
So you're seeing kind of the shift where that's why, like you said, right, your attention is starting to focus more Europe and other parts of the world.
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
exactly. Because West has basically said, you know what, we don't want to work with you. So they become kind of like a barrier to entry here.
It's in my opinion, it's almost kind of worse than that. It's not even that they have any legal justification other than you've got the SEC chair, who, for the record, was very pro crypto. Like, there's you know, videos of his MIT classes where he was, you know, this is cool. And now you basically have a political puppet. Well, you like that political Muppet puppet perspective exists in Canada as well. And I mean, really, the only thing that's going to lose is the Canadian public, because like I said, this ecosystem is growing 2 times faster than the internet. Could you imagine if the regulators were that negative on the internet and browsers, and all of those businesses that have propelled growth in the US ended up in Europe and the Middle East? I mean, you'd have a completely different dynamic in the world capital markets. That's what's happening right now. And it's really sad to see, because a lot of that entrepreneurialism that really keeps Canada on the map, like I said, Hive, Hut, you know, Galaxy's listed in on the Toronto Stock Exchange because the NASDAQ won't let them. And the Toronto Stock Exchange is even trying to be like, it's nonsensical. We're just companies. We're just trying to grow. We're just trying to offer a product that people want. What is like, just because you don't like it doesn't mean you should stand in its way. Right. So therein lies the snafu. But look, for us in DeFi, it's been nothing short of miraculous. You know, our AUM's on fire. The regulators in Europe have been, you know, proactively supportive. You know, there's always challenges when you're brand new, but you know, literally you're going to see this entire industry grow to the detriment or grow without North America.
Yeah.
Basically.
So look, let's talk about DeFi, because that's honestly, if you're looking for some kind of exposure without having to do, you know, all the nitty gritty work, but you have a group of experts putting it together, this is a great opportunity to get some exposure, right? Exceptional management team. I know Olivier Rossi Newton, he was one of the founders of Hive Blockchain. And that company is now with Frank Holmes, right? We've had Frank on a few times. So maybe walk us through this opportunity, because it's been very fascinating to see the developments recently. And you guys are like a full one-stop shop for like direct exposure into this space. So it's a unique opportunity.
Well, not only is it a unique opportunity, paradoxically, it's actually exactly what the Canadian and US regulators want, despite how negative they are. So Ollie, and you know, you got to mention Ollie, but you also got to mention Johan. Johan's the creator of XBT Provider, which is now CoinShares. So you literally have the founder of Hive and the founder of CoinShares working together, creating DeFi and Valor. Valor is our asset management division, and DeFi is the parent company. We own 100% of Valor. And all we do is we wrap crypto protocols and DeFi protocols, whatever you want to call it, blockchain-based protocols in ETPs, which are, you know, it's a different nomenclature for a very similar product. It's basically an ETF. It's just the European version of it. So we have 16 ETPs right now. You know, Solana is our biggest, Avalanche, Cardano, Polkadot. We have Bitcoin Zero and Ethereum Zero. You know, I chuckle when I listen about management fee wars in the US. We're already offering a Bitcoin ETF legitimately. It's called an ETP, but it tracks Bitcoin one for one. You can pull it up on Bloomberg. But that was the brainchild of Johan and Ollie. And what's even more weird is, so we had $500 million in AUM in Q3 of 2021, and Bitcoin and Ethereum were our two biggest products. We were generating a lot of revenue, but our costs were quite high. And that's very typical of a company that's just started, right? So you have a company that basically becomes public in January, February of 2021. All of a sudden you have $500 million in AUM with only four or five products, Bitcoin and Ethereum. And Bitcoin, you can lend out at lower rates than what you can get for Solana, Polkadot, whatever staking rates. And Ethereum, similar, they both generate lower yields. And we were trading at like $3, $4. We're now at all time highs, like almost $100 million higher than what our highs were before.
You're talking about the AUM. You're talking about the AUM, yeah, not the yeah. price, but we'll get to
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah. So our AUM is now 20-30% higher than what it was at our all-time high in 2021. And Solana is our biggest product, which means we're generating more income than we used to with Ethereum and Bitcoin being our largest products. And here we are at 70 cents, you know, barely moving. And it's just once again, you know, everybody's like, well, we want to see your quarter. We want to see your next quarter. And I'm like, well, guys, you don't like go back to when we were 500 million, look at that quarter, Q3 2021, and just do the math, right? Bitcoin's your largest product and you're lending it out at 2-4%. And now Solana is your biggest product and you're lending it out at almost 9%. That's including the management fee. You know, if it's 100 million in Solana, you're making 9 million bucks US. We're closer to 200. You're making 18 million just on Solana. And people aren't doing the math. Now, that's partially our fault because we're secretive about what we're doing. But it's also, in a way, the market's fault because you're actually just not doing the work. And I can sit here and tell you guys that there will be, like, we have no institutions in the stock. There will be institutions in this stock. If Bitcoin keeps on moving, we'll get to a billion easily. I think at around 65,000, we're at a billion in AUM. And you know, you just do the math. We make about 7-9% on a billion. That's 70, 80, or 90 million US in revenues. And then you take the costs off. Let's just say it's the low end, 7% across all our products. And I'm pretty sure it's higher than that, but let's just use the low end. So you're going to do 70 US dollars millions in revenue. Let's use a high end cost, 10. And that's high end. I think we've got it lower than that. You're at 60 million in profits. If you think Bitcoin's going to 65,000, you're going to make about 65 million US profit. And the market cap is what, 110 million US? It's just crazy. It doesn't make any sense to me, but I guess therein lies the opportunity.
Of course, but it's like you said before, right? You have the big names and the tech, and they're stealing a lot of capital and a lot of attention. And that, I back to your point again, is I think there's going to be a point where it's going to actually break, and it's probably going to be one of the final breaks that occurs before a long cycle of things coming back to normal in the market. And that's what people are going to start scrambling and chasing for opportunities they've never thought of before, because there's only certain places where things are actually cheap and there's actually a lot of upside value. And then when they're going to start chasing, they're probably going to potentially miss that ride.
Yeah. Well, that's very true. And you know, we will have our Q1 out shortly our Q4, our annual, and then we'll have our Q1 out probably shortly thereafter. But again, you know, like if the capital markets were efficient, you'd never make any money. It's just frustrating to sort of be one of the mouthpieces. You know, you still got Ollie, you still got Johan. You know, we've got 20 more products we're going to launch. This is no secret, no secret. All we need to do is get 25 million in 20 new products, and you're at another 500 million in AUM. Like, this is not complicated math. Mm-hmm. We've given the market guidance, like we make 1.9% on everything other than Bitcoin and Ethereum. So you're going to have, let's say we get the other 20 products out there. You'll have 36 products, two of which have no management fee, but let's just say there's 800 million across those other 36 products. Those are going to generate, it's 1.9%. Let's just use two for simplicity. That's 16 million in revenue. And even if you just use our management fee for that valuation, and remember, the markets are always forward-looking. They're not backwards-looking. Right now, people are acting backwards on our stock. Forwards-looking. If you think we're going to launch 30 product or get to 36 products, if you think Bitcoin's going to 65, you should be buying millions and millions and millions of shares of this company. Because just on the math I gave you for Solana, 18 million Solana, and then similarly, I gave you the math on our management fees. That's another 16. That's 34 million. And we're trading at 110, 120 million US market cap. I mean, that's still only six times profits. These companies trade at 20, 30 times profits. It's just is bonkers. But that's why I'm talking to you guys.
So yeah. you mentioned and again, I think that's the opportunity right now, because there's this massive disconnect. I mean, it's happening in other sectors too, but that's what makes it so attractive. Like, especially when the psychology, and I think this comes from your earlier days when you were in the mining space. Well, the best time to buy something is when something is hated, right?
Then
that's where the real, you know, multi-bagger opportunities come from. And I'm looking back at like the charts. I was looking at it last night of all the DeFi stocks that were out there. They all were flatlining below 10 cents, all the microcap ones. And in my mind, I was like, you know what? This is like, nobody wants it right now. This might be a good time to add. Obviously, there were some that I didn't execute on. Again, your chart looks phenomenal, but I agree. There is that massive disconnect that the market hasn't realized.
Yep.
You did mention, though, there are institutional, you don't have any institutional investors yet in the stock, but your
that I know of, like no, I'm an ex-institutional guy. And often when an institution, you know, meets you and buys it, they'll be like, hey, man, we dipped our toes in or whatever. I haven't had one of those conversations.
Okay. So, and I think that's probably upcoming too. You do have institutional clients, though, within the ecosystem of DeFi. Could you maybe talk about that? What type of institutions are those, and like, what are they primarily looking for in this market?
Well, I mean, the biggest institutional client that we own a part of is SIBA Bank. We own 6.6% of SIBA Bank, and then I think you're also referencing our private investments, like Sovereign, Clover. Is that where you're asking the question?
Exactly. Well,
look, the easy way to answer that is, you know, right now Bitcoin is, I call it like the parent, and Ethereum is like the uncle, and then kind of everything else is the kids. And you never really know which kid is going to be the tallest. You don't know which kid's going to be the shortest. You don't know which kid's going to be the smartest. Well, all of a sudden, Solana's the tallest, right? You know, we have some perspective on other protocols, like SEI as a protocol we're looking at with Intrigue. We just did an asset-backed structure on ICP. And we're going to look to do quite a few more on foundations, just because we have a really compelling business offer for them. And that is a bit of our secret sauce. I don't really want to get into it. But
so foundations meaning like charities and whatnot?
No, the actual foundations behind these protocols.
Oh, okay.
So the ICP Foundation, that, you know, like we can approach all of them, and those products, you know, without walking through all of the dynamics, but you know, we can make between 1 and 1.5 million on these products. We don't need to do anything for. But if we did 20 foundations at $1 million, that's $20 million, right? And it's just, we're seeing. Well, to your point, you know, we have an edge. We have Pomp. We have his analyst, Will Clement. Like, people want to know why we bought Reflexivity. I'll answer that right now. Why wouldn't you is the question I give everyone. Anthony Pompliano is maybe one of the most respected commentators in the space in the U.S. We absolutely will look to uplist in the U.S. And it's a much more favorable environment now with the Bitcoin ETF than it was when we were trying to do it before. Will Clement is widely reputed as one of the best analysts for these single asset tokens, chains, whatever you want to call them. And then you have Johan and you have Ollie, who both are widely known as sort of crypto OGs in the space, the original gangsters. So you know, we get to see Sovereign prices, and Sovereign's the first ever DeFi protocol based on the Bitcoin blockchain. So we get to invest in those. And another one that was interesting that we've kind of turned into some interesting monetary gains was 3IQ. We were there at inception. 3IQ just got sold. So yes, we do have perspectives. But the reality is, you know, from a regulatory perspective, we can do ETPs on the top 100 protocols. So we only have 16, and some of them are dupes, right? Like we have Bitcoin Zero, and then we have carbon neutral Bitcoin. We have theoretically, you know, 86 more protocols, tokens, or sorry, ETPs that we can put out there. You know, you get to 100 of these, you know, what's the next step? All you need is 10 million and 100, you're at a billion. That's when we're making kind of 70, 80, 90 million. You know, the sky's the limit. You can do double up Bitcoin just like they do for gold, and you can do double down. Those are leverage products. It's just crazy what we can continue to do. And so it's, you know, yes, there's all these new ones that are emerging, and we will invest in them, and theoretically we will turn them into ETPs, but there's still also the top 100 that are here today. Right. Go ahead, sorry.
No, don't worry. I was going to ask, in generally, how do you guys typically stay ahead of the, like, obviously the space is very dynamic and always changing. So there must be kind of like a game plan in order to make sure you guys somewhat stay ahead or evolve with the way the space evolves.
Well, we're so small, really, in terms of the amount of protocols we have, that, like I said, you know, we can go another 10 or 20 and you're still in very relevant and material protocols and some of the up and comers. And then you can go from 20 to 100 and you might have less important or less liquid or whatnot. You know, do we have a look on it? I mean, yes. I mean, our view would be, from inception, it would be, okay, this is an interesting protocol. Let's take 100 grand and invest 100 grand of our own money in it. And if it is as interesting a protocol, we're going to make 10 times our money on that one investment. Oh, and then by the time it actually becomes really cool, then maybe we're going to wrap it in an ETP. So there is a thought process around it, but then there also is that thought process of, look, guys, we're kind of a diversified way of playing the entire blockchain ecosystem, right? You can play Bitcoin by just buying us. You can play Ethereum by just buying us. You can play Solana by just buying us, Cardano, Polkadot, whatnot. Yeah, your ultimate upside is maybe a bit diluted because we have 16 products. And so you're not getting that full bang for Bitcoin, but you're getting access and exposure to 15 other products that you wouldn't normally be able to buy or even think of. So I guess this is a long-winded answer for you of just saying, like just like the inception of the internet, you never knew who the winner was going to be, but if you had bought all of them, you'd probably be a millionaire 100 times over. It's similar with the protocols, right? Like we never thought Solana was going to do what it did. We had an inkling, but all of a sudden Solana is our biggest product. And that's a good thing, because on Solana, like I said, you know, we're earning a lot more on our biggest product now, which is Solana, than we were on our biggest product in 2021, which was Bitcoin. People aren't thinking that through, and you have to think it through. And, you know, we're putting out monthly updates. I think we're going to go to bi-monthly updates, because people just, again, this isn't complicated. It's pretty easy math, right? It's, what's the yield on Bitcoin? What's the yield on Ethereum? What's the yield on Solana? How much do they have? What are their trading revenues and what's their management fee? And you just add it up, yep. And then you do the math, right? And there it is. That's what the earnings will be. So it's an exciting time. Yeah, we're going to have some cool new products, right? Like you will see some weird ones that maybe were unexpected. ICP is a perfect example. Since we got permission and did the ICP, and it hasn't started trading yet. It's like, we're actually working on it right now. And that's not inside information or anything. We've press released it and everything. It's just, it takes a little while to get it listed, because you got to make sure your data streams are working and there's no hiccups. But since we actually announced that product, ICP has gone up, I think, tenfold. We didn't know that. We knew it was interesting, but we didn't know that.
I think it just shows you where we're at in this sector right now. We're still early. Like, this is the craziest opportunity, I think, in our lifetime. Without getting, you know, too bonkers about it. But to your point, Russell, it's like there's a huge gap right now in the AUM of the market cap. To me, that's a very attractive thesis in itself. Yep. Like I, it's just a matter of going in there right now. So I wanted to ask you before we wrap up here, everyone's got their own sort of price projection on where Bitcoin is going. And usually, historically, we've seen every time Bitcoin moves, there's always a lag in Ethereum and then the altcoins. Yep. And then, you know, you got Pepe coin, which goes up like ridiculously. So where do you anticipate Bitcoin being in the next year or 18 months for that matter?
Really good question. I was talking to a very, very, very smart guy in the industry. Two of them, actually. One of them, I'll tell you what their theses were, and then I'll tell you what mine is. And it's interesting. One of them was like, look, it's going to settle around 90 or 100 just because we're going to test new highs for sure. But what people need to understand as well, that the more derivative products you have on a, on an underlying, the more bad leverage can be applied against it versus good leverage. And I don't think it's out of the realm of belief, in my opinion, that some of these bullion banks, there could become crypto banks that will mute the upside and mute the downside and just trade around it. Like I do, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but it's just too obvious in the gold space that that happens. And gold was the anti-dollar trade, and you could see them trying to protect the dollar. But then this other super duper smart guy was like, look, 1 to 2% of the gold trade's coming into this. 1 to 2%. 2%, 2 trillion. That's a double of current prices, maybe a triple. So what does that equal? Well, 60 times three, or call it 50 times three, 150. So, you know, my view is I'm going to hedge my bets here. Cause people like, it's really weird when you read the commentaries on StockTwits and CEO.ca, like people take your language and they turn it against you. Mm-hmm. So I'll be bullish, but reasonable. I'm almost 100% certain this is going to get to 100,000. And I'd say there's maybe a 20 to 30% probability it'll get to 150. And I think you are looking at, well, I've said it before, this is growing two times faster than the internet. So you're looking at that same type of growth profile, but more with a single asset perspective versus, you know, all of those, you know, how many browsers were there at one point? How many competitors were there? And now you have these behemoths, right? So I'm going to go kind of low end 100, high end 150, and I'd love to be wrong and see it go higher.
I think it's fair to say too, because April is coming up, and for all the early adopters of crypto know what that means. So it's just, it's basic supply and demand at that point. You cut the supply in Bitcoin in half once again. You've got all these different forces of institutions with the ETFs. The demand is almost 10 times the supply. You have all these new projects coming in that are providing utility to the marketplace that, you know, Solana was a perfect example. I mean, it caught everybody off guard in the most pleasant of ways. So it's almost like there's such a bullish thesis right now for crypto. I'd almost, and I don't know if you agree with this, if you're a portfolio manager, if you're an investment advisor, your job is on the line if you're not offering this to at least like 1 to 2% allocation inside your portfolio, right?
Yeah, well, we commented on that earlier, right? Like what's going to happen is you're going to have individuals who actually adopt and buy into these protocols. And like, you know, like it's only a matter of time before instis and ETFs start buying DeFi, right? Like we're just doing too well. And people will, if you want to wait, and you'll see that we are. I'm just telling you we are. You know, it's only a matter of time before you see those flows come in and take DeFi higher. But similarly, if you have the underlying growing as much as it's growing, and let's say you only have 10% of the portfolio managers and 10% of the investment advisors that adopt and buy into those trades, and it does what we think it's going to do, those 10% are going to outperform by such an extreme amount the other 90% that the other 90% are going to be forced to start buying in at highs. And then you get that, you know, massive move. And I think that's something that you can expect probably after the halving. I think you're going to see that next big wave because they're going to have missed it. Bitcoin's going to rock it. And you're going to see just this almost panic buy of Bitcoin. And that's where I think you might get to that 150 or higher.
To kind of finish this off a little, one question I want to ask you was, like, what excites you about the space? You know, it's always fun to see the excitement and the energy and the love for passion.
Other than the math, because the math makes sense.
Well, look, I'm a math guy, right? Like econometrics was sort of the precursor to AI. It's like modeling and iteration and all that kind of stuff. So from the math perspective and just the pure geek in me, I just love the sector because it's such an interesting sector. But you know, like So I played a lot of sports, played a lot of volleyball. I loved that competing. I really think that investing is sort of a spin-off of that. It's like one of those professions where you can actually get the same high as you did from competing in an athletic endeavor. That's what I actually love about it. And then obviously when you get it wrong, it's like losing a game. You get it right, it's like winning a game, and you feel so good. So look, I get in so much trouble for saying this on the chat boards. It's hilarious, but I'm going to say it again. Look, if someone said to you, we're going to take you back in time 20 years and we're going to allow you to buy Amazon right now, when Bezos was working out of his garage, you can buy Amazon right now. Now, for everyone out there who's listening to this, I'm not saying DeFi is Amazon. I'm saying, what if you got a chance to buy a 1 million bagger, you know, back then? This ecosystem is growing 2 times faster than the internet grew. There are going to be winners in this ecosystem that parallel the winners in the internet. I mean, Satoshi's the perfect example. Who knows how much that guy's worth? But you have, in my opinion, an obvious opportunity. All the data points are there. Supply demand's there. All the economic fundamentals are there. Like, you've got crappy government spending too much. Like, everything is lined up, and yet people can't see this trade. It's only your fault. That's the excitement I have. Wow, I got this right. Wow, DeFi, you know, DeFi went from, you know, 20 cents to $4 down to 8 cents, now back up to 80 or 75 cents, wherever it's trading at today. But it's probably, like, I'd be willing to bet it's going to test new highs just because of what's going on in the background and the way the business model works. That's exciting to me. So that's, you know, the answer I'll give you.
Mm-hmm. We'll tie that into the fact that everyone is always an expert after the move, especially with the internet stocks, right?
But, yeah.
So it's good. Look, where can the listeners find you guys? You're traded on the NEO under the ticker DeFi, but where can the listeners find you and the rest of your team, Russell?
Well, I'm the one you want to access just easily. Ollie's super busy. Johan, I'm our star at valor.com, and I mean, that's the easiest way to reach me. That being said, I'm always on presentations and stuff like that, helping out, so you can just join those, or ironically, I will every now and then look at the message boards, and you can reach me sometimes there. But no, the best way to reach me is just by that email, and then obviously the websites are defi.tech and valor.com. And our US symbol is DEFTF.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. It was great talking to you, Russell. Thanks so much for sharing the insights into this whole space. And it's always refreshing to have somebody who's got both the precious metal side and the crypto side into his perspective. I think that's very unique about sort of where you're at. And who knows, Nick, maybe I'm probably going to take a position here in the next couple of days. We'll see.
Well, thanks.
Not investment really advice.
Yeah, this is
not investment advice. Just want to make sure that this is very clear. This is not investment advice. But yeah. Go ahead, Russell.
Just a good chat. Well, I was just going to say, it's just a good chat. So
awesome. Well, again, thanks for coming on, and keep up the great work.
You bet. Talk to you guys later. Cheers.
Take care.
Ciao, guys. Take care.
Bye.